Art Musings.
Art Musings.
This is Art Musings with Love from Oxford, a podcast where we natter with local artists, learn about their process, their work, and delve deep into the juicy bits, the dark underbelly of being an artist. I'm Carol Terrio, a painter focused on watercolor and inks.
And I'm Sally Ann Stewart, a lino cut printmaker who loves depicting the beautiful city we live in. We're kicking off our art careers and hoping to learn a few tips and tricks from those around us. And we thought you might like to join us. Allons-y.
Allons-y. So we've had a few exciting weeks, Sally. So I got a podstatus.com to tell you how well you're doing in different countries. And it said for Art Musings, we are in number one position in the visual arts in Finland. We are number two in Ireland, number four in Croatia, and number five in New Zealand. So, and we're number 13 in the UK.
Come on, UK people.
I want to just say a huge shout out to Finland, Ireland, Croatia, New Zealand. We love you.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So well done us.
We need to learn some Finnish. Hello to our Finnish friends. Pretty cool. So today on Art Musings, Carol and I are chatting with Bri Layton. Bri is a collage artist who's been building her art career alongside teaching art history and Zumba, as well as looking after two teenage kids, two cats, a dog, and a husband. I was not sure whether to include the husband, but I thought even as adults, we all need looking after sometimes. So
some more than others.
Yeah. Her work was accepted into this year's Oxford Art Society Open Exhibition, and she's recently begun selling her collages at art markets. So we're really excited to talk to her about the creative process of collage, how she discovered that medium, and also coming back to art later in life, something that we're no strangers to here on Art Musings.
And today, the topic is the nasty creative block. You know, the one when you're looking at a blank sheet of paper or a block of wood or clay or whatever, and you get nothing, nada. Mm. And then, of course, there's the opposite, the creative rush. That's the thing I've been experiencing this week, right? So we're going to ask Bri about, you know, how can we break through this creative block before, you know, we start crumbling under its pressure and giving in to the self-doubt, criticism, and all that jazz. You've suffered any of that stuff, Sally?
I'd say it's more that kind of the rush of ideas and that creative overload. I'm not a terribly fast worker, so what tends to happen is something will take me a long time, and while I'm working on it, I'll be adding more and more things to the print wish list, you know, the list of things that I want to do. So I think I probably add about three or four new ideas to the list for everyone that I actually strike off it. So it's very frustrating, but I think also it's probably like that internet meme, you've probably seen it, where there's a guy walking along with his girlfriend and he's looking over his shoulder at another woman. And it's that thing of, you know, as soon as you start to get into the hard work of something, suddenly everything else seems to look a lot more attractive. How about you?
I don't have blocks very often, but when I do, I have certain ways of dealing with them. And maybe we'll talk about that later in the show. Maybe we should meet our fabulous guest.
Definitely.
Okay, Bri Layton, welcome to Art Musings.
Hello both. Very nice of you to invite me on.
Oh, it's good to have you here.
Before we start, we like to invite you to share your website or socials with listeners so they can see your art as we chat. So where's the best place to find you?
Well, I'm on Instagram. That's where I put most of my stuff. So I'm Bri, B-R-Y underscore Layton. On Instagram, and I'm also on this nice little site called Ko-fi, which is K-O-F-I. It's a very nice sort of idea, that quite positive, that you can see artists' work and sort of poodle around seeing what you like, and you can message the artist and buy their stuff, but you can also donate a few quid and just say, I like your work, have a coffee on me. So
yeah,
it's a really nice idea, I think. So yeah, I'm on there as Bri Layton.
I love that.
I spend any donations on glue and blades.
Okay, so Bri, you told us when we asked you to be on the show that you used to paint and draw obsessively when you were a child. And I'm wondering, what kind of things did you like to paint and draw?
Oh, I did. It was like every evening, constantly every weekend. Copied quite a lot of pictures of like Duran Duran or Wham. I'd have my copy of Smash Hits and I would do really accurate portraits, which actually looking back weren't as accurate as I thought they were.
I did one of Donnie from New Kids on the Block, I remember. And I gave it to my best friend and she was really amazed. It was probably awful, but she thought it was really good.
I think mine was, do you remember Twisted Sister? Does any of you remember that? No, you're probably too young.
I've heard of them, but I think they were more of a US and Canada thing.
Well, if you saw what he looked like, you'd be amazed that that was my first portrait. I'm going to have to find you a picture later. I'll put it on Instagram. Okay.
I had a lot of Andrew Ridgeley.
Oh, I imagine he'd have quite a good face for drawing, quite angular.
Yeah, great nose. Yeah, nice spiky hair.
Amazing. So generally pop idols them.
Yes, I've always been quite into, you know, pop culture, and that's been quite a big inspiration and to this day, actually, thinking about it. But then I would also draw my cats and just anything in art books. I think the way that I got into art and art history as well is my parents had this set of art books on like the great artists, and they had the most fantastic spines, all of them a different colour. And that really drew me to them on the shelf. So I would sort of pore over these and then do my own little sketch of a Goya or something like that.
Wow. And so were your family quite arty then, or was this just part of their kind of literature that they had around the house?
My mum's fairly arty. My dad's not at all, to be fair. But yeah, my mum is, she can draw really well. And she has a really good eye for colour, and she gets art and is enthusiastic, like, about going around art galleries and museums, but doesn't really do very much art herself. They've always been very encouraging of it.
That makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Arty books on the bookshelves and nicely decorated house, that kind of, you know, thoughts of colour all the time.
So you started art so young, yet you went off and studied not one but three languages at degree level?
Yeah, I think I did art for GCSE, and it was the most time-consuming subject, definitely.
Oh, wow.
Probably partly out of necessity, because you've got to have so much work and it takes much longer than doing, you know, a French grammar exercise or something. But also because that's what I loved doing. So I just let fill every moment that I had spare. But then I think the thoughts for A-level choices went a bit more practical. And I thought, well, actually, am I going to make a living from art? I ought to really go the academic route. So my slight concession was that I did art history as an A-level as well. And then three languages, French, German, and Spanish. And then when it came time to choose what to do at university, I didn't want to let any of the languages go. So I kept going with all of them.
Do you still have a good grasp on all of them, Bri?
Oh, they're a little bit rusty, I think. I do some Spanish tutoring. And actually, because I teach Zumba classes as well, loads of the music is in Spanish. So listening to Spanish keeps it bubbling along.
Ah, good revision.
My mum's listening, is trying to learn Spanish at, you know, in her 70s. And I keep encouraging her to listen to Spanish soap opera podcasts, right? So she can follow along, because it's all about love and betrayal. So the words are probably, you know, pretty simple.
There's so much drama. Yeah.
I know, exactly. It's a great way to learn a language. And so did you do art while? Oh, yes, you were studying art history, but did you still doodle and do art on the side when you were studying, or did you kind of put it on the shelf for a bit?
Yeah, less so. I mean, I sort of occasionally dabbled, but it felt like I really ought to be learning my verbs. Or then I think also doing four subjects at A level was, you know, a little bit nerdy. And I just worked really hard, just didn't have enough time.
We had three languages to get down. I mean, God.
So, and then university, just being, that's working, of course, but also being really social. And I think when you're in student digs, it's harder to sort of set everything up.
Yeah.
All the stuff that you need for painting or drawing. And then actually you feel like you're missing out on something and ought to be down the student bar or whatever. And then after that, I just kind of fell out of the habit, really. You know, working, having kids, and just life takes a different route.
It takes over. Yeah. You got to pay bills, you know?
Exactly. And I came back to art history when my youngest was, I think, about three. And I decided that I wanted to train up and do something different for a living. And so I went back to college, did some undergraduate courses, and that wasn't enough. So I did my master's here in Oxford. And now I teach and I lecture on art history. So I've sort of got two major loves, really, the art history and the collage. I think that the art history gives me a really good open mind about visual things and visual culture, and shows me a lot of different possibilities. But at the same time, I think because I've got that sort of critical eye of art, I can't get back into painting or drawing because I can see where I'm failing. I'm too self-critical and I analyze it in a different way.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be really hard. Suddenly, yeah, having that encyclopedic knowledge of everything that is, in inverted commas, good. And then, yeah, inevitably the self-comparison that would come, well, it would for me anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't say encyclopedic, but so I can definitely see, like, if I do a drawing of an interior, for example, and I can go, oh, Vermeer would have done that so better. Slightly depressed.
He wasn't looking after two teenage kids and three pets, though, was he? Let's be honest. What?
And the husband.
So how did collage come into your life then? When did you discover it?
It was about 3 years ago. And I think I just had a magazine that I was flicking through, and I saw an image that I thought, that's a very strange sort of, a strangely isolated body. And I thought, if I cut that out, I wonder if I could replace the head with something else. And then I got experimenting, really. I think my earlier pieces were not that great. I was just sort of finding an image of a room and then cutting the door out and then shoving a big boot out of the door. It was just weird kind of juxtapositions, but I just found it fun and relaxing. And it just felt so lovely to get back into something arty and creative.
There's a weird harmony that comes when you get back into it and you realize, oh my God, where have you been for the last, you know, decade? Certainly, that has how it felt for me when
definitely.
I returned.
Definitely. And yes, I'll have, you know, a few weeks where I do nothing, you know, then I'll have an evening. I mostly do it in the evenings after the working day and sort of sit down and go, oh, why wasn't I doing this every single evening? It's the best feeling. It's lovely. And it sort of completes me.
You know, so many things in your life take stuff out of you, don't they? Completely exhaust you. But it's so nice if you can have something that, even if it's like the last thing of the day, is, you know, when you're tired, is putting something back into the tank rather than draining it. I don't know how I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's something so positive about creating things.
Mm.
And I think this is why I do sort of manual collage rather than digital, because know, when you spend so much time during the day on the computer, that's the last thing I want to do when I'm having sort of fun, creative time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a revival of manual art or manual making because of that, because of the exhaustion, like screen exhaustion.
Yeah.
And I do use Procreate occasionally on my pad just to kind of sketch out ideas, but 95% of the time it's a sketchbook because it's better for me. It just calms me down.
Yeah. I think there's something lovely about just settling down for an evening, grabbing a food magazine and a book on tractors and a knife and a Pritt stick and just seeing what happens. And doing it all by hand.
Do you know, Bri, I may have something for you. I think I've got a stash of old Living Etc. magazines, like 100 of them.
Ooh.
Yeah, would you want them?
Yes, please.
Yes, yours. They're yours. I got your name on it.
My lounge is just horrendous. I look like some crazy hoarder because these piles of magazines everywhere.
I was going to say, are you surrounded by kind of skeleton magazines and books that you've raided?
Yeah, basically. And I've got that we have a wall of books, which are mostly art history books in the lounge. And then I've got one corner, which is my books for collage. And it's the weirdest little collection. I was just having a look at it before we started talking. And there's like a book on Ireland and a book on how the Alpine railways were created and tractors 1752 to 1945 and crazy and a lot of Ladybird books. Yeah, the weirdest little collection.
Yeah, I imagine they're great. And how does it work? Do you have an idea for a piece you want to create, or does it just does the idea come together as you're browsing your resources?
Yeah, I never really set out knowing what I'm going to make. I mean, my husband got me for my birthday last year. He found on eBay this small collection of books on warplanes. And I have absolutely no interest in warplanes, but the images that you get are fantastic. So if you put legs on them and, you know, all these kinds of things. So I grab a couple of very disparate magazines or books and flip through them and see what comes out. It's there's a lot of luck and chance and serendipity involved. And actually, I think that's partly why it's so relaxing and therapeutic, because everything else in your life tends to be quite plans. Like if I'm teaching something and I haven't prepared for it, then I'm going to do a bad job. And so I sort of tend to over-prepare and over-organize everything else. But with this, I can just launch into it, knowing, really not knowing what direction I'm going to take. And at the end of the evening, if I've produced a collage or two, I look at them and go, well, that's a surprise.
And imagine if a work takes 2 hours and at the end of it, you've got this work that you're going, boom, that's awesome. And it could have been 2 hours on Instagram going down the rabbit hole of God knows where, right?
It's true.
It feels so much better afterwards for me when you have an artwork at the end of the time.
Absolutely. My Instagram feed is a bit mad. It's so niche. It's just collage.
Yeah, I think that's good, though. I think that's a smart move.
It's very inspiring. And actually, if you see all of the other artists working, I'm sure you guys find this as well, that if you see other artists working in the same medium as you, they are so different.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that I produce is, I mean, I think, very different from a lot of the other people that I like on Instagram. So, yeah, it's a very diverse kind of a medium as well. And I like that.
Before we move on to this episode's focus, what are your current art goals? Do you have goals for your work, or are you happy with it being that just that kind of daily freestyle, yeah, just exploration and having fun?
I think to do it more because, you know, as I said, you know, once I sit down and do it, it's just such a joy. And also to put it out more as well, like doing the Oxford Art Society exhibition, that was really validating. I felt I felt incredibly chuffed to have a piece that was accepted. So lovely. And to also, it sort of brings you into the wider art community as well.
Yeah, you just, so that's so important, isn't it? Just trying to put yourself out there, and you just don't know where it's going to lead and who you're going to meet and what that might lead to.
Yeah, because the way that I work, you know, I don't share a studio or, you know, give classes or anything. It's so it's actually a very solitary thing, and it couldn't really be any other way. But it is lovely to, once you've produced stuff, get out there and meet other artists. It's really lovely. And also doing more art markets. So I'm going to, I've done a couple of markets in Gloucester Green in the centre of Oxford. And it's lovely. We've got this nice little run of tables with other artists and craftspeople. And again, it's being part of a community, getting your work out there and like, I've actually produced something that other people like.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
The product of my crazy mind.
Isn't that amazing? It's so fabulous.
It's definitely validating, isn't it, when people buy your stuff.
I think this is a perfect place to pivot to our focus topic, the creative block and the creative rush. Maybe we should start with the block first. It's kind of this like evil spirit that sits on your shoulder and haunts every single artist out there, I think. I don't know. I can't imagine there's many artists out there that haven't experienced it. I want to know first, though, what made you choose this topic to focus on?
I think because for me, it's such an extreme. I swing from doing nothing for weeks to sitting down and producing four collages in an evening. And I think it's probably something fairly universal for artists, that we spend a lot of time thinking about what we might create or trying to get something good out, and it just doesn't come.
Do you think, like, in the times between your art forays, are you thinking about it? Are you frustrated? Or is it just you're focusing on other areas of your life?
I'm mostly not thinking about it, actually. It's, it's times when I'm really busy with other work, or my mind is taken up with family stuff, or I had a couple of months when I wasn't really making anything earlier in the year, because both my kids were doing big exams. They had one doing A-levels, one doing GCSEs. And actually, by the end of the evening, it seemed to be, I don't know, I guess a little bit self-indulgent or frivolous to sit down and make art when my kids were like beavering away, revising and what have you. So
that's super interesting, because that's a kind of block that I hadn't considered before. It's just that life gets in the way and then you end up feeling like this is frivolous.
Yes, which is such a bad thing, because I think it's like exercise, actually. Like, if you get really busy, then your trip to the gym is the first thing that goes.
Because you feel selfish.
Yeah.
You feel like this is only for me. This is just benefiting me. So
it's true. And I think making art, if you're particularly like me, if it's more on the hobby side of things than the earning a living side of things, then yes, it seems like an indulgence. That other things should be prioritized.
What about you, Sally? Do you have that?
There's certainly the exercise going out of the window. That's pretty much every day I think, yes, I'll go for a run tomorrow, and then, oh, I'm too busy. What a shame.
I guess it's different for you because you are full-time as an artist.
I think perhaps it comes through in a different way, which is because of the pressure of trying to make money. I don't allow myself enough time to mess around and play. And when I do, I feel really bad about it. The other week,
What do you mean feel bad?
That it's frivolous and that I shouldn't be just spending time
having fun.
Having fun.
You asshole.
I'm such a terrible person. No, but I mean, the other week I thought it was a lovely day, and there's a library down the road from us here, the Temple Cowley Library, and it's got these huge windows, and it's got this reading room, and it's just a beautiful light in there, and it's always nice and warm. And I thought, right, I'm just going to go down there and have a nice couple of hours just drawing some fungi just for fun. And I really enjoyed it. But I was like, oh, no, I should be back at home. Like,
there's a laundry to do.
There's, you know, the stuff that I'm actually trying to get out and sell, what I should be doing. And so it just feels a bit frivolous. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's important, really, is that experimenting and, you know, working on your drawing skills.
And it's the irony of it all, that people get jealous. Like, oh, you have a nice life. You get to draw all day. You know, isn't that fun for you? And you're like, you have no idea how guilty people feel about trying to be creative. Because it takes a lot of time to be good.
Yeah, I think that's very common for artists, isn't it? Especially if it is your job. Like, my husband is also an artist, and the times that he gets asked to, oh, could you just make a change, put her arm a little bit higher, or change that to yellow? And he's like, well, okay, but it took me 3 days to put her arm there. You're going to pay me for the change. And I think people see art as something that is fun. And could you just whip me up this poster?
But no, it's just work, isn't it? It's work that's as sort of hard and iterative as any other work. You know, it's just grinding through it to get the good result. It's not just slapping things on.
I find it even more exhausting.
Exactly.
You know, it's more exhausting because you're giving your all to a creative process to try and, I mean, and of course there's holding your breath while you're working, which is what I tend to do. So I exhaust myself.
And there's all the research that goes into it, or the time you spend trawling secondhand bookshops or whatever, and you still got to pay your mortgage, you still got to pay your bills. So, I think, oh, it drives us nuts, actually, in this house, like this idea that because it's perceived as fun or silly or frivolous or, you know, creative, that it's not as worthy as any other form of work. You know, you wouldn't have asked a lawyer friend to, oh, just whip me up a will, would you?
Yeah. So going back to those horrible periods of block, interested to know, Bri, what you do to fight back against that, because I've been listening to a book, Jerry Saltz, I think you say, I'm not sure if it's Saltz or Saltz, who's the art critic for, I think, New York Magazine. He's written a book called How to Be an Artist. I think it's been out for a couple of years now. And
isn't that hilarious? A critic writes a book about an artist.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I thought. When I heard about it, I was like, oh, what do you know?
This is what I like, and I'll give you a good review.
But it's actually a really, really good book and very kind of warm, down to earth. He's, you know, really personable, and he's not preaching about how to make good art. It's more the kind of practicalities of doing it, like where to find inspiration, like how to get ideas from amazing artists like our friend Vermeer, but not be so intimidated by them that it's crippling. There's a section on creative block, and he quotes various people, and the sort of the essence of it is that you just have to carry on working even if nothing good is coming out, because you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Is that something you've tried, Bri, or are you more of a kind of take a step back, take a break, and then the inspiration will come back?
Yeah, I have tried that, actually. I think that's a thing that a lot of writers say, isn't it? That you put in a couple of hours at least, and even if you don't really have an idea when you start, you see what happens. So I have tried that. I just sat down and got out a couple of books and to try and just see where it took me. And the first, this is after a couple of months of doing nothing. And the first evening I produced a couple of things, but I hated them. I really just thought, what was the point of that? But actually it got me into the swing of things again. And then I produced some stuff that the next night that I did like and that was working. I thought, yeah, I'm back. Mm. Yeah, that was nice. But I suppose Yeah, just sitting down and doing it, putting out a bit of time for yourself. I think those are really good ways for me. And also going to a bookshop like the big Oxfam on the Ring Road, or there's Jericho has got a lovely secondhand bookshop, and just picking up a book that is fresh and new and that you haven't leafed through before. And you go, ooh, this would go really well with that Edwardian woman that I saw in another book. And yeah, just finding bizarre matches and juxtapositions. That it creates quite a lot of excitement and surprise and joy. So,
Briar, I was just going to chastise you lightly for not going to the library and doing this, but I suppose they wouldn't really like it if you cut out the pictures from their books.
That's frowned upon.
Stay away from the library.
I have that problem, actually. I have a few books on the shelf. Like, I've got one in particular, Fashion History.
Brilliant.
And some of the pictures are just fantastic. It just beautifully isolated as well. So they're not kind of bleeding into whatever's behind them, which is lovely for a collage artist. And just really great shapes, but it's such a great book for reference. So I'm quite torn between chopping into it. And I need two copies, actually.
Do you have people, because I mean, it's probably going to happen now with Qual and I, but do you have people regularly like foisting books upon you that they think you might like?
It's fantastic. I do have a friend of a friend who he reads all of these interiors magazines, and I don't know who does it. He keeps them absolutely pristine and then gives it to my friend and she brings them to me, so which is lovely. But I mean, that is why I could build a little camp out of magazines in my lounge, but I'm always happy to get more.
I'm sure we're going to have lots of listeners who are going, oh my God, I can foist all my old books onto Bri. You probably can. Get in touch.
Please.
Yeah, you can get in touch with us or get in touch with Bri and we'll put you in touch if you're not on Instagram.
Okay, and what about then too many ideas? Is that something that you get then, to sort of that overwhelming amount of stuff that you want to produce, but you know, it's only you? You know, I sometimes wish there were multiple ones of me so the other Sallys could get on with all the rest of the ideas on the wish list.
I think one's enough, Sally.
All right.
I welcome the rush of ideas. I think that's fantastic. That's a lovely problem to have, I think. Because there are those sessions where you just go, oh, that's not for this collage that I'm working on now, but it will look great with another thing. And then another one comes out. And so actually, when I get on a roll, it's lovely. I really love that.
And do you have like a sort of a system for keeping things that you've seen kind of noted? Because I don't know, I have ridiculous amounts of screenshots in my phone of things that have inspired me. And Google keeps telling me my storage is about to run out. So how do you kind of keep all those things, ordered, all the ideas?
In the early days, I started off doing that sort of, if I came across something that was interesting, I would cut it out, put it in a little file. But actually, I would then forget about it, or it would get a bit battered and dog-eared, and it was just futile in the end. So I tend to just fold over the corner of the magazine and page and just hope that I remember it's there. I mean, sometimes I'll come to make a collage and go, oh, there was that picture of a pumpkin that I saw in, and now which magazine was it? I've got so many sort of autumn cookery magazines that I can't remember where I saw it. So I need a better system. I need to be more organized.
We all need better systems for everything. Honestly, I don't know anyone who's not feeling that way, you know, in some area of their life. Certainly in art, like all my stuff's under the sofa. It's ridiculous.
What about you, Carole? Because you've got, I mean, just incredible amounts of work that you produce, but you must have ideas coming to you all the time to be actually, you know, the ones that I see are the ones you've produced. Your head must just be full of stuff.
Well, It's kind of weird because, as you know, Sally, but like earlier this year, I discovered that I was aphantasic, which means I have no visual recall or memory, or memory. Like if you asked me to visualize something, I can't. And I never understood that people could until like 6 months ago. So I have, and there's ties to that and sketching a lot, right? So there are some ties that artists have this, and also that's why they started drawing, because just to see things when people are talking. So I often doodle when I was, you know, if you're reading a book, I might doodle on the side as well to draw the character out as I'm picturing them. And I used to do that always as a kid as well. So I'm always sketching, and I didn't realize till our last show with Emmett that people feel stressed about sketching and they feel they should sketch. I don't have any views on that. I just love sketching. So my sketchbooks are full, but I don't have a system. They're all over the place. Mm. You know, I've got about 150 sketchbooks, and I've been at it for, it's huge. So I can always go back to them and look at them. So that's why I like, that's basically my way of doing it.
I'm quite organized with my finished collages. I mostly produce things in A4, and I've got a few Lever Arch files that are absolutely chocker with my finished collages. It's the source material I need to organize a little bit.
I think I know the answer to this, but if you had to choose between creative diarrhea or creative blockage, or constipation. You're going full on diarrhea, aren't you, Bri?
Oh, for sure. That's lovely imagery, by the way.
It's the one time in your life where you can say, I choose diarrhea. Never at any other time.
I do this other podcast called Sticky Pickles, and we, over the years, it's been like 5 years we've been doing it, but we now have this line: when a situation is too sticky, we can always get out of it by saying sorry, diarrhea. So there you go. Tip for everybody. Yeah. Bri Layton, on that note, thank you for coming on Art Musings.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
Oh, really nice to chat to you, Bri. And can you remind us where people should go to learn more about your work?
You can look on Instagram. So I'm Bri_Layton, or look on Ko-fi, K-O-F-I. And buy me a print stick.
Oh, thank you, Bri.
And if you want to get in touch with us, maybe want to come on the show, maybe give us some suggested topics, get in touch with us via Instagram at Art Musings Podcast. You can learn more about Bri's art, Sally's art, and my art in the show notes for this episode. Thank you for listening. It means the world. See you in a few weeks. Excellent, Bri. How do you feel?
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I have fun doing it. I think Sally does too.
You sounded really great.
Yeah, you did.
I thought maybe it's from your teaching, but you just speak very fluently and confidently.
I guess there's something fairly performative about teaching and teaching Zumba as well, because you've got to be, I'm not a natural show off actually, but if you teach a Zumba class and you're not sort of prancing about and gurning a bit, then you're wrong.